I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Kristen and Karen. Hello, ladies. What's up?
Hello.
Hi.
How are we all doing?
I'm good. I have a fun little story to tell you.
Oh, I love stories. Go.
Okay. Today in the mail, I was surprised only because I'd forgotten that it was coming. But a couple of weeks ago, I was playing the online Armada game. You know, like the Ready Player One Armada. Yeah, I was playing the video game, and if you got a certain score, they would send you a patch. And I got a patch today, except I got three patches because apparently my score was that high, I guess. So that was a nice surprise this morning.
So you're
and they're pretty cool looking.
A cool video superstar.
Yeah,
I love
basically.
I love it. Karen's like, yep, essentially, yeah, that pretty much sums it up right there, kids.
I spent like 2 hours playing that game because I am a perfectionist and I did not have the time to waste, but I did it anyway.
Oh,
well,
I love
and
it.
The funniest thing is I'm sitting in my room and all of a sudden I hear like clicking, like click, 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 and I'm like, what is she doing? And it went on for a while, so I was like, okay, finally I have to ask. So I went over just like, oh, I'm playing a game. I was like, oh, thank goodness, because I was
all.
Like, I have no idea what's going on.
You're like,
there.
I'm a little afraid, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I had to save the world from aliens.
It seems,
so...
you know, reasonable. Reasonable.
As
well.
You do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Kristen, any fun stories? Nothing? You weren't, like, saving the world from aliens or anything like that? No?
Not recently, no.
Total
I'll
bummer.
Save that for when Independence Day comes out.
Oh, yes. Nice. Can I just tell you that... I'm sorry, I'm totally distracted. I have my TV on mute in the background, and there was a Deadpool commercial on. And it's where he's, like, holding the ridiculously cute puppy, but also making fun of Captain America Civil War. So it says Captain Deadpool, and it's, like, Captain is crossed out. Can I just tell you, the marketing team, once again, for Deadpool, I mean, seriously.
Knocking it out of the park.
They haven't stopped.
Until the very DVD release. Like, they're not playing. I love it.
They're so good.
They really are. But anyway, this is really about books, I swear. And my cat is now trying to attack my feet. I'm so sorry. If I scream, I'm really, really sorry, but my cat thinks she's playing a game right now. Oh, yay, yay. Anyway, back to what we've actually been reading, the important things in life here. All right, Kristen, because, well, it looks like you've been very busy reading, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've been up to?
Well, I went back to work, which means that I have 8 uninterrupted listening hours, so I broke out all my audiobooks, and, yeah, I read Never Tear Us Apart by Monica Murphy, which is the first book in, like, the 2-book series. The second book just came out last Tuesday, and I'm making my way through that right now, but it's really, really, like, intense and dark. It's about a girl who is kidnapped by a guy very young in life, and his son actually discovers her out in the shed and saves her, and then... like, going on in their lives, like, he kind of is told to stop having contact with her because the world kind of wonders whether he was not guilty of something in all of this and that he felt guilty and that's why he saved her. And it's really kind of twisted and weird, but it's so far really good. And the sequel is really interesting because it's a further exploration of, like, their relationship. So I'm getting into that. Again, a little darker than my usual fare. My next read/listen was the On Dublin Street audiobook, written by Samantha Young. It's the beginning of the On Dublin Street series, which I've been meaning to read forever. And if it couldn't get better, just because it's a really great story, it's set in Scotland. So there's a lot of Scottish accents, and it's so much fun to listen to because they're actually really well done. And the main character in that is actually an American girl who has dual citizenship, so she lives in Scotland, but she's American, and then she meets this guy who is Scottish, and it's just really great. And I'm working on that series too, but I started and finished in the last week the Unidentified Redhead series by Alice Clayton. So it's The Unidentified Redhead, The Redhead Revealed, and The Redhead Plays Her Hand, which I just finished tonight. And it's about this young, like, she's not actually super young. She's, like, in her early 30s. And she, like, tried to go out to Hollywood when she was younger because she always wanted to be an actress, and she kind of quit, and then she decides, I'm going back, I'm giving it one more try. And when she does, she finds a little success, and she meets this guy, and it's hilarious. If you've ever read Alice Clayton, you know that her books are really, really funny. And this series kind of ties into her newest series, Nuts, and the sequel, I think, is called Cream of the Crop. And that one comes out in July. But this series kind of ties in because the main character talks about these two characters in the first book of that series. So I was really, really curious when I found out that the two actually, like, work together a little bit. So then I had to go back and read them, of course. And they are so much fun and ridiculous. And, yeah, so I've really been enjoying my reading this week.
And would you like to tell the listeners how many library cards you've applied for so you can have more audiobooks?
Check out, in most states, fun fact, in most states, any city in the state that has its own library system, as long as you are a resident of the state, you can apply for all of their library cards for free. And so therefore you can get access to their digital libraries, like their OverDrive and all of that. And I've applied for, like, I already had one for Toledo, where we live, but I've also applied for Cleveland and Cincinnati and Columbus and Rocky River and Dayton. So I have, like, 5 library cards now, and it's fabulous because between the 5 of them, they typically tend to have the audiobook I'm looking for, which is awesome. So, you know, check out your state. You know, Google it, look and see what libraries you can get digital cards for, because it's really, really fun to, like, have a collection that you can dive into to look for more books, all the books.
See, in the state of Connecticut, we run off of one system called Bibliomation. So you can use your one library card at any library in the state, as long as they're part of the Bibliomation system that includes the OverDrive.
Nice. Yeah. Ours is very disjointed. Like, every city kind of has their own, so.
Oh my, no.
You know.
We're one here. So there you, now you know what you can do in Ohio, now you know what you can do in Connecticut, so if you're in those states, you can get library cards in all kinds of different ways, evidently. Very fun. Yeah. I think it's so funny. Kristen's like, yeah, I'm keeping the library system afloat one library at a time.
Single-handedly.
Love it. All right, Miss Karen, what have you been doing this week? Good Lord, there are a lot of books on this list, Miss.
Yes, there are. Well, I also haven't been on book hype in a couple of weeks. So I finally got out of my reading rut. It's been a little hard, and I've been having trouble really diving into something. But as usual, Kristen has been a terrible and excellent influence on me. And so I've been reading some of the books that she's been recommending me. The first two were Losing It and Faking It by Cora Carmack, which are absolutely delightful, and I haven't gotten to the third book yet, but it's sitting next to my bed because I need to read it very soon. But I really loved Faking It. Oh, it was so good. And the boy in that book is, I told her, okay, this is actually kind of a funny story. After we got done reading Paper Princess, she was, you know, kind of upset that I didn't love it as much as she did, which is totally fine. And she's like, What can I do to make it up to you? Because she was feeling guilty for suggesting it. And she was like, I know, you need a good boy. And I was like, yes, I need a good boy that I can read about. She got so excited, I thought she was going to burst into tears. It was amazing. Aww, and so she hands me...
Keep going.
She hands me Losing It. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to start reading this tonight. And then basically immediately after, read Faking It.
Who are the main characters in those books? Because I know I've read them, but I can't recall. Like, I read them a long time ago.
Losing It is Garrick and Bliss.
Okay.
And Faking It is Max and Cade.
Okay. Okay. It's coming back to me now.
Yeah. And then... all the goodness. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then after that, she hands me... These actually... I'm telling you, terrible but excellent influence. She won these books, but already owned them, so she gave them to me. And this is the Stiletto series that I read, and I read the first one. Didn't love the ending of the first one, but finally decided to pick up the second one, which is Love the One You're With, and then I immediately read Just One Night after that. I'm not even kidding you. I stayed up all night and read them front to back. Two nights in a row.
Yep. She yelled at me in the morning. She was like, I was up until 4. Thank you so much.
I've definitely read all of the Stiletto series. And just wait till you get to the Oxford series because, well, you're going to stay up again. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to warn you in advance. You might want to block a Saturday from morning until evening and just get through the two that are out and then painfully wait with the rest of us for the other book. Yep.
Yeah. Lincoln.
Well, Lincoln. And once you read it and you meet Lincoln. Oh, wait. Have you read all 4 of the Stiletto books?
I'm reading Emma's right now.
Oh, okay. You'll meet Lincoln in this one.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. But he doesn't come full circle for like, oh my God, I need his book now, until the first of the Oxford series, I would say. And then he only expands upon that in the second of the Oxford series. And you're like, but where's his book? I need it like yesterday.
Hashtag where is Lincoln?
Exactly.
Okay. There's so much to read, you guys. But, okay, so kind of switching gears out of the romance for a little bit. I read Trials of Apollo by the Hidden Oracle. Let's try that again.
And she's so excited she doesn't know the name.
Can you hear the smile in my voice? It's so dumb. I'm sorry. I'm such trash. Trials of Apollo, The Hidden Oracle by Rick Riordan. This is the next Percy Jackson book, except it doesn't necessarily star Percy Jackson. He's in it. He makes a couple of cameos, but it's told from the point of view of the god Apollo, who has been turned mortal. This book was very good, and it felt different to me than the other ones because we're getting it from a former god's point of view. So I know a lot of people kind of complain about how formulaic his books can be sometimes. I really don't mind. It does not bother me at all because I love the book so much that, yeah, please give me more of the same. I have no issue with that. But this one I think felt a little different. And the amount of cameos in this book of fan favorite characters is pretty staggering. We don't get everybody, but we get a good chunk. And I wrote an article on Hyperbole about all the ones that we got. And a few of them, like, I'm actually glad Kristen wasn't here when I was reading it because I was ridiculous and I was giggling and, like, fist pumping. It was super embarrassing. And I'm sorry, I love Percy Jackson so much, but I'm really not that sorry.
And so, she's been yelling at me for not having read it right away. Yes. So I'm working. It's on the list. I just have to find some time.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet either. But we will be talking about this as its own episode because Karen is very adamant that when there is a new Rick Riordan book, in a series, like the first in a series, that we really must discuss it and have a whole show dedicated to it. So we will be getting to that. That will be one of our books of the month. And then the other one will be The Raven Cycle. As soon as I get Natalie, who's in Australia, and Brooke together, we'll also have an episode chatting about that. So we'll have 2 different book episodes this month, probably, is the plan.
Yeah. Yes. And this is another Percy Jackson book, and I feel like it's so important because that's where it all started, you know? So it means a lot to me. So I'm really excited. Really excited to talk about it. You know what? We should have Danya on for that episode because she just finished it. And I'm like, finally, I can talk to somebody about it. But she was freaking out as much as I was.
Okay. We can check her schedule and make that happen. We love guests here at Buckeye. Bring it on.
Yeah. And last but not least, maybe least, actually, throwing it down now.
Ouch.
I listened to Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie. And it's narrated by Lily Collins. And this is the first time I've ever read Peter Pan, actually. And I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. But it wasn't quite what I was expecting. And I actually had a whole conversation with Brittany about this because I knew she had read it. And I was like, all right, I don't get it. Like, why you love it so much? So I just, like, I'd like her to explain it to me. And she said it has a lot to do with nostalgia. But found it, like, oddly violent and kind of scary. Like, Peter Pan kind of scares me. And I think reading it for the first time as an adult, you see it very, very differently than you would as a child. So that was an interesting experience. But I'd like to know if anybody else either really loves Peter Pan, you know, as a book, like not the movie or anything, because I love the movie and I love Hook and I love the idea of Peter Pan, or if anybody else really dislikes it too.
I'm sort of indifferent. I think it's one of those things that you read as a like a child and you're exposed to as a child, and you have the Disney movie and then you have all these other incarnations of late. So I think your view of Peter Pan becomes very different than what is in the novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I found very striking, because I had assumed I knew the story, and they definitely, like, the cartoon version definitely hits on many of the same points, but the book is different enough that I was surprised at several turns.
Yeah, so I guess I don't really have strong feelings about Peter Pan one way or another. Kristen, do you?
I've never actually, like, read the full novel. I've read parts of it because I feel like there was research done at some point in my life to understand, like, the tale itself. So I know more about, like, the original story, but I don't think I've ever actually read the whole novel. So I don't know. But I know that it is a little darker than, like, the Disney version. So I did know that when she started it. But
interesting.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot of feelings either.
You're like, I am completely indifferent. See, we're all indifferent to Peter Pan at this point in time. He's been done. Moving on.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, I only read two books this week. I'm such a slacker. I read Dear Heart, I Hate You by J. Sterling. This is a kind of a romance novel, and if you could tell by the title, it doesn't always go so well in the novel. It's about these two people who meet, Cal and Jules. Cal lives on the East Coast in Boston. Jules lives on the West Coast in Malibu. And they both are very, you know, ambitious 20-somethings that are starting their careers and want to be super successful and have a plan. And then they meet, and there's sort of this love at first sight moment, and they have to figure out what that means for them and how they're going to reconcile what they feel for each other and living on two different coasts and still being really ambitious in their jobs and stuff. So it was a pretty fun, interesting story. Doesn't always go the way you think it's going to go, which I think is super cool too. And then I read A Totally Awkward Love Story by Lucy Iveson and Tom Ellen. And this is a super funny, geeky YA read that's just like a rom-com gone bad. Like, think of, like, a John Hughes film, like, so, like, Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles or Breakfast Club, but that, like, teen vibe from those kinds of films in a book that's about an awkward love story about these two people, Lucy Iveson and Tom Ellen, met when they were in the equivalent of high school in England. They dated, it didn't work out, now they're best friends, and they wrote this novel together. So some of the stuff that's contained in the novel is about their relationship. Some of it is totally made up, but it's a really fun read, you guys. So if you get the chance, I definitely suggest picking it up because it will make you laugh. Anyway, it's super cute, you guys. Like, it's really funny. And you just, I love a good YA novel that's really funny. Like, it can be about romance, but it's funny, and it's enjoyable, and it's not just about the angst of young love. It's about the really ridiculousness, funny parts of it, too. So that's what's really, really good. All right, so quick note. Karen and I, yay, Karen and I, will be at BEA this week, which is in Chicago. It's normally in New York, so I could just drive there. However, they switched it up. And we've got to go out to Chicago, which I'm kind of excited about, not going to lie. So if any of you guys are going to be at BEA, be on the lookout. Karen, myself, Danielle, and Laura, all from Hypeable, will be kicking around at BEA for the whole weekend. Starting on Wednesday, we'll be there, which is super exciting. There's a lot of cool stuff going down at BEA this time around. We'll get a glimpse at Leigh Bardugo's next book in the, what's it called? Six of Crows. The next one is The Crooked Kingdom, I believe. So I believe there's a sneak peek of that coming out. There's also, Veronica Roth announced this just this week, the title of her new novel, and there's going to be something there for that as well. I don't think it'll be the whole novel, but it might be a sneak peek into the novel, which I am super, super interested in, because this is her first thing since Allegiant, and all of us know how well Allegiant went over with everybody, and so I'm really super curious to see what this is going to be about. So the name of this book is called Carve the Mark, and it'll apparently appeal to the fans of Star Wars and Divergent. So the synopsis of the book is, on a planet where violence and vengeance rule in a galaxy where some are favored by fate, everyone develops a current gift, a unique power meant to shape the future. While most benefit from their current gifts, Akos and Sera do not. Their gifts make them vulnerable to others' control. Can they reclaim their gifts, their fates, and their lives, and reset the balance of power in this world? Sera is the sister of the brutal tyrant who rules the Shotet people. Sera's current gift gives her pain and power, something her brother exploits, using her to torture his enemies. But Sera is much more than just a blade in her brother's hand. She is resilient, quick on her feet, and smarter than he knows. Akos is from the peace-loving nation of Thuv. I don't know who thinks up these names, I'm serious. And his loyalty to his family is limitless. Though protected by his unusual current gift, once Akos and his brother are captured by enemy Shotet soldiers, Akos is desperate to get his brother out alive, no matter what the cost. When Akos is thrust into Sera's world, the enmity between their countries and families seems insurmountable. They must decide to help each other to survive or to destroy one another. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about that description? It was poorly read on my part. I apologize. But what do you guys think?
Sounds intriguing.
It does. Go ahead.
With all the names and the crazy names, it sounds very fantasy. Like, you know, Divergent screamed dystopian in full voice, basically. And I don't know what exactly... It is science fiction. Okay. Because I was like, I'm not sure exactly where it's supposed to fit into, but yeah, no, that's awesome. It sounds interesting. I'll definitely check it out. I know that some people are a little skeptical because of Allegiant, but it sounds like a really cool setting and setup, yeah.
It sounds very different from the things that she did with Divergent and that whole series. So I'll be curious to see what it's like, and I'm hoping we get a little sneak peek at BEA. Of what that is. They released the cover and the synopsis just last week, so it'll be interesting to see where they go from here with that, but I don't know. I think
that cover is really cool.
It's super creepy. Like, it reminds me of, like, a haunted housey kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's, like, kind of sparkly, and
I know, you're like,
I don't know.
It's sparkly.
I like the cover, I really do.
Yeah. So, Karen, is there anything specific that you're super excited for at BEA?
You already know the answer to this question.
I do, but I, you know, the audience probably does. But go ahead and tell them anyway.
Yeah, so Ian Colfer will be there. And, of course, he wrote the Artemis Fowl series. But he's also writing the Iron Man YA book. And, I mean, I love Iron Man, like... probably even more than I love Percy Jackson, if that gives you any kind of scale.
That
yeah.
is intense.
It's a lot. I have a problem. Kristen is aware. She still likes me, so that's all that matters. Yeah.
Yeah, you should see the Civil War Funko shelf. It's kind of one-sided.
Oh, Karen. Karen.
So anyway, of course I want to read a new Iron Man novel, and this is actually, you know what, I hadn't known anything about it until I literally just looked it up, because I wasn't sure if they had actually released a synopsis or anything about it, but it's on Amazon, so I guess this is real, even though it is also kind of poorly structured. But basically, Tony ends up going to an international eco summit in Ireland, and somebody tells him It says, someone close to him forces him to question his role in making the world a more dangerous place with his high-tech weaponry, but Stark doesn't have much time to reflect before an old enemy presents him with an even greater challenge, the assassination of all the eco-ministers in Iron Man himself. Just how invincible Iron Man is when he is stripped of everything remains to be seen in this breathless adventure by the best-selling author of Artemis Fowl. Not gonna lie, it's kind of a generic synopsis, especially because right now this story about Iron Man, you know, his weapons potentially wiping out the world and him questioning whether he's doing the right thing and him having to survive with nothing but his wit has been told time and time and time again. But I'm still going to read it, and I'm hoping that it kind of changes some things and maybe adds to his story, because he can be a really unsympathetic character sometimes, and maybe this, you know, if people are interested, excuse me, what was that for?
That's
I wrote a 3,000-word essay on why he's not unsympathetic.
And I almost went through piece by piece and told you why you weren't necessarily always correct. It almost happened, but I didn't do it. I was really good.
Jennifer.
I read it, and I have some questions about the psychology behind some of those pieces. That is all. It's just the behavior. His behavior is very specific, is all I'm going to say. We'll talk about this later, though, because this will be the rest of the episode if we start this conversation. But I will see you in, like, literally one day, so we can hash it out then.
Okay. I'm not looking forward to it, but that's fine.
if you guys hear yelling on the floor at BEA, you'll kind of know why. It will be Karen and Jen in the corner screaming at each other.
I'm not going to yell. There's no yelling involved. They're just... I have some clarifying questions I need to ask. That is all.
Yeah. So, anyway, I mean, this is adding to the books that Disney and Marvel are putting out. I think there's, like, going to be 5 this year, or maybe just 5 coming up. I don't think they're all coming out this year, but he's one of them, and it's coming out in October, and I believe we're going to get it at BEA, so that'll be really exciting.
Yeah, there's supposed to be some available at BEA. Last year, they released the Black Widow novel at BEA, which is written by Margaret Stoll, which is awesome. So I'm pretty excited to get my hands on it and kind of read it. There are a couple other things that I'm not sure they're going to have at BEA, but if they do, I'm going to do, like, the ultimate happy dance. One of them is Wayfair by Alexandra Bracken. She's going to be there. I just don't know if they're going to have Wayfair there or not. It's the second novel in the Passenger series. We did Passenger this past winter as one of our reads, and we all pretty much just loved every minute of it. So... kind of looking forward to book 2, just saying. And there were some other things that popped up that I thought were going to be really cool, but of course right now I can't remember what they were.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't gone through and made a list yet, which I really need to do.
Yeah.
But they always, one of the best things about BEA is, like, you go to try to get your hands on the things you really want, but sometimes you accidentally end up with these hidden gems too. And it, I mean, a lot of it is because of you, Jen, but I've also discovered on my own a lot of authors and books that I really like that I haven't, like, ever heard of before that I probably wouldn't have picked up otherwise. And that's one of the coolest things. Of course, that's what BEA is for, to kind of get the word out about these books. And they do it with the big names, and those are always the draw, but there are some really good ones, too, that kind of sneak in under the radar.
Yeah, sometimes you just, you're like, oh, this looks cool. Or somebody's really like, no, you have to read it, you have to read it. So you're like, oh, okay, I'll take it. And next thing you know, you're like, oh, my God, that book is so good. So I always love finding those, too, Karen. It's a good call. It's, like, one of the better parts of the convention, because you stumble across things that you never may have picked up before until someone's like, no, but really, let me pitch you this book. And then when you hear it, you're like, oh my gosh, really? They'll hand it over. So
yeah.
Pretty excited about that. And I'm going to try to limit what I bring home this year, because I have to mail it to myself rather than just drive it home in my car. So should be pretty interesting. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some news that has been popping up lately. So you guys may have heard a while ago that The Forest of Hands and Teeth by Carey Ryan is going into production as a film. Did you guys also know that Maisie, and I'm going to forget her last name, Williams, Maisie Williams, yes, from Game of Thrones, she plays Arya Stark. She will be starring as the lead in the film, and that it's in pre-production right now, and production fully will start in the film in January. So are you guys familiar with The Forest of Hands and Teeth?
I have no idea what this is, but I see that it says YA thriller, and yep. I'm in.
Karen, are you ready for the icing on this fabulous cake for you? Zombies. Yes. Zombies.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Zombies.
Sign her up.
Where can I get my hands on this?
I knew I had her at Zombies. It's a series, and it's already all published, so you do not have to wait for it. So I highly suggest you get on that. This is a super cool book. Carey Ryan writes some really, really cool things. This was one of her first kind of bigger novels that people started to read and really talk about. And I'm super excited it's getting made into a film. And here's the really, really cool part about this. This is basically a very female-led production. So you have Maisie Williams starring. You have Kate Maberly, who worked on Finding Neverland. She directed and adapted this screenplay. So she was an actress turned director, and this is her first feature film to direct, and she adapted the screenplay as well. So I'm super kind of excited about all of this business. So it's set for pre-production. It's going to start filming in 2017 in Romania.
Wow. Right? That's going to add some really cool scenery.
I know. Yeah. And then Doug Liman is one of the executive producers on it, and he kind of, you know, worked on The Bourne Identity and all that stuff. So just saying, it's kind of a big deal. It's really cool, you guys. It's a really cool book if you have not read it and you like zombies in any way, shape, or form, or really character-driven kind of pieces. I think it's definitely something you should check out. So, and Maisie Williams is also going to be in I, Boy, which was also a novel. And you guys, this was my favorite thing as I was reading through this. She's also in a movie called A Storm in the Stars. And that movie is based on Mary Shelley. Karen.
What?
So,
how do I not know any of this stuff?
And okay, so I'm not really sure that this one's based on any one particular novel. But in case you guys haven't heard me, or I think Marima used to talk about it all the time too, Mary Shelley's story behind Frankenstein is that she was, you know, hanging out with Lord Byron and Percy Shelley, and, you know, they kind of used to go up to the Lake Geneva house and hang out and do their thing. And so that was where Frankenstein kind of came from. That's what this movie is about. It's about the life of Mary Shelley and how she wrote Frankenstein and then fought to get it published under her own name. And Mary Shelley is played by Elle Fanning in this one. And Douglas Booth is playing Percy Shelley, I think. But he's also in it. And then Maisie Williams is in it. Yeah. No, I hadn't heard about it when I was reading the article. So I looked it up to see what it was. And I'm like, shut the front door. I love that. That story of Mary Shelley is one of my favorite stories ever. I don't know why, but I really like it. So I'm kind of super excited for that movie, and I will definitely be going to see it. Just saying.
I mean, it's like the ultimate girl power story. What is there not to like?
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, there's something so cool about how she came up with the idea and how they were all sitting in, you know, in this house talking about different stories. I think I like the idea that it's all these really super creative people just kind of playing off each other and how it kind of came about. I just really enjoyed it. So, I don't know. Anyway, that's some movie/book news/random Mary Shelley news for you kids. That's what we like. And then we had an interview popped up today on Collider.com with Ty Sheridan, who is prepping for Ready Player One. He is playing the lead in Ready Player One. And Karen, I know you were down with Ready Player One. It was one of your favorite things. Was I wrong? Was it someone else?
I think it was somebody else. I did read it. I liked the idea of it, but it was very, I didn't really know how to feel by the end of it. I was a little frustrated at the pacing, but the idea was so cool that I actually think I want to read it again to see if I can get into the story more. But I am so on board with this movie because that story is so cinematic. I think it's going to be amazing on the big screen.
There's a lot going that goes on in the novel. And so it's virtual reality based. For you guys who haven't read Ready Player One, it's kind of set in a virtual world. And you don't really see the characters, like, on the screen. I'm not really sure how they're going to do it, because really they should be, like, animated versions of themselves for the majority of the film, correct? If I'm remembering correctly.
Good point, yeah.
Yeah, so all I know is Steven Spielberg is doing it. He snatched it up right away. He put it into production. He's, you know, pushing for it. And that Ty Sheridan is cast. And so here's what he had to say about when they asked him, you know, what did he think of the book once he had a chance to read it? He said, I haven't finished it. I'm reading it now and about halfway through. What's great about the book and about the story is that it's such a strong and honest depiction of what is to come, not only in entertainment, but for our future. I think that there will be a different plane of existence that is a virtual realm. And I think this movie is the keynote to portraying that in entertainment. Potentially, it's a huge milestone for virtual reality in cinema. And I was obsessed with the virtual reality before I even found out that they were doing the film. Before I had a chance to audition, I was researching virtual reality with a friend of mine. He came to me a few years ago and was like, man, with all the advancements in virtual reality, I'm telling you, Ty, it's going to be the next big thing. We have to write something or make something in virtual reality. So he became obsessed with virtual reality, and then the adaptation for Ready Player One came up, and he got an audition, and then he landed the lead role. So that's kind of a cool little backstory for him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see them prepping for Ready Player One. Ty Sheridan, for those of you who don't know, is also in X-Men Apocalypse. So, you know, he's got a couple things happening this year. Just a couple small little indie things, you know, no big.
He's playing Cyclops, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
Yep. Small,
Kristen, did you read this?
I have not read it, and I get shamed every time I mention on Hype that I haven't read it, because Selena and Marima and Pam and Kyle all love this book, so it's on my list. but I want to get my hands on it. They've told me a lot about it. Every time news comes out, I hear more and more about, like, this, like, the idea of the novel and, like, what it's about, and it sounds really cool, so it's on the list. I'm hopefully going to get it read before the movie comes out. That's the goal.
You have plenty of time, because the movie is not even in production yet, so you're good. You're good. So that's just an interesting little, you know, tidbit on Ready Player One, which I think when it does come out will kind of be a big deal. Just, you know, a smidge. Because, I mean, Spielberg, let's face it, what is he going to do with that? Like, it is like his ultimate playground. Virtual reality in a film? Yep. He's in. Love it.
Yeah, he's good with the big kind of things, like, you know, dinosaurs in Jurassic Park and a giant shark in Jaws. Like, he's good with kind of grasping something that seems bigger and larger than life, and that's kind of what I've gotten from the idea of what people have told me about the book, like the whole virtual reality world and all that. It seems, you know, it's something we don't necessarily have a big grasp on yet, so yeah, it sounds really, really cool, so I'm looking forward to it in both contexts, like in reading it and seeing the movie eventually.
Yeah, I think it'll be really cool. All right, so who are my lovely comic book junkies out there? We have a little comic book announcement for you, because, well, why not? I'm not sure if you guys are necessarily familiar with this comic book, but it's called Lock and Key. It's written by Joe Hill, and it's illustrated by Gabriel Rodriguez, and it's a horror comic, and basically they're planning on turning it into a live-action TV show. It's essentially about these three brothers who live in this really creepy old, like, gothic house. And they discover that their family's ancestral home features doors to other dimensions that can be unlocked with special keys hidden throughout the house. So, I think it'll be really interesting. Given that there's so many things going on TV that are based on comic books and different kind of book options, I think this one will be really fun. Especially like the horror-like genre. I think it's got a place with Scream being on TV and Scream Queens. like, that has brought a whole new level of kind of the horror and gore on television. And so I think that this particular comic will definitely have a following on TV. Have you guys ever heard of Lock and Key? I've definitely heard of it, but I can't say I've read it.
The name sounds really familiar, but I don't, like, when you were describing it, I had no idea that's what it was about. But it sounds amazing, especially because I'm getting more and more obsessed with the horror stuff on TV, and even the darker shows like I Love Lucifer, and I want to start watching Damien. Pam keeps telling me to watch Damien, I just feel like this could be really cool.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of potential. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And given that places like Netflix and Hulu are all picking up, like, 10 to 13 episode series of things, like, it would be a perfect place for something like that, because you can get a little grittier and a little darker than you could on, you know, regular TV. So I think it's got potential. So, and it feels a little bit like a fresh take on, like, Supernatural, if you will. Do you know what I mean? It kind of feels like it could have that vibe to it, which is always fun. Supernatural has an obscene following, so I think that it's got potential.
And just think of the sets. The gothic house.
I know. I love a good gothic house, you guys. With doors to different dimensions. I mean, how can you go wrong with that? That's endless. Yeah. Endless. Speaking of horror genre items, let's talk a little bit about Anna Dressed in Blood. So, Anna Dressed in Blood is by Kendra Blake. It is probably my favorite book by her. It is horror to the max. Karen, if you haven't read it, I'm not sure what you've been up to. But
I think I own it. Does that count?
Karen. you will love this book. I'm telling you. It is right up your alley. So cool. Love it. But it's being made into a film. And I have some reservations about this because it's being produced by Stephanie Meyer. And I don't know. I don't know how to handle it. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But they finally moved forward on it. I honestly didn't think it was ever going to be made into a film. I thought it was just going to sit there in that, you know, has been optioned limbo. But they cast the leads in Anna Dressed in Blood. So Maddie Hassan, who was from ABC family series Twisted, and Cameron Monaghan, who is from Shameless, Gotham, The Vampire Academy, he is going to be the lead, which is super exciting because I could definitely see him pulling it off in a lot of different ways.
Is he the cute guy with the long hair?
No. No, he's the sidekick. You're like, which one?
Because I've never seen Twisted, but I've seen commercials.
Oh, no, Twisted, the girl is from Twisted. The blonde girl is Maddie Hassan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You're like, moving on. So I'm glad to see that it is in the process and stuff, but I'm also still super, super leery because that book is near and dear to my heart. So we'll see how it turns out. But again, it fits right into kind of this reimagining of the horror tale in YA and in just in television and kind of bringing it back in a fresh new way. So, and for those of you who don't know about Anna Dressed in Blood, it is a novel where the lead boy is kind of a ghost hunter and he's got all these protection wards and it's what he does. And he's very careful and all this stuff. And then he goes to this haunted house where people are getting killed, like violently killed. It's in the book and it is violent. I'm going to tell you right now, do not go into this book with a weak stomach because it's a little graphic. But so he goes into this house and there's this ghost there and she is not nice. But she doesn't mind him. The others, well, they have issues. And she's referred to as Anna. That's why it's Anna Dressed in Blood. And so he needs to figure out what's going on with her and why she's haunting this house and how to technically get rid of her. But at the same time, they're also becoming friends in a way. So it's an interesting story. So it's probably the worst description ever of it, but I promise you it's good. So moving right along, not quite the same topic, but let's talk about Freeform for a second. So you guys know that ABC Family switched itself over to be Freeform, this new fresh and hip TV channel. And at first, I think we all kind of made a lot of fun of the fact that they changed their name from ABC Family. Like, we were not okay with it. However, they haven't just changed their name over. They're rebranding themselves and kind of doing this thing that's super crazy with their programming. Like, they started off making slightly edgier shows. So they're doing Shadowhunters. They have a show called Stitchers on right now. And then within the next year, the stuff that they're going to be putting out is super, super cool. And one of them is Famous in Love. And if you guys have read Rebecca Searle's novels, this is going to be super fun if it's done right. Basically, Famous in Love is about a girl who's just, in the book, she's in high school. In the TV show, she's going to be in college, which is fine. Aging up is a normal thing that kind of happens when we transition to TV. So it's about this girl who's just this average girl, but she really wants to be an actress. So on a whim, she goes in and tries out for the part in the biggest blockbuster coming out because it's based on a best-selling novel. So think about, like, the Twilight stuff and Divergent and the Hunger Games. And every time those books were being cast, like, the frenzy that happened over the casting and, you know, how people reacted to that sort of thing. Because that's what this book is about. It's about this girl who's a nobody. She's just a girl. And she's, you know, not an actress. She's you know, not name recognition or face recognition. And she gets thrust into the spotlight when she's cast as the lead female in this faux novel. And she's going to be played by Bella Thorne. And the best part is there are two boys in the novel, because there's always a love triangle in YA novels. You know, that's kind of the trope that they're playing with. And some things happen, and she has to kind of choose her relationships wisely, but she has to do it all while in the spotlight. So it's a really cool look at the things that you don't really expect or think about, but, like, you always see in the tabloids kind of thing. So I'm kind of really excited to see what they do with that, to be honest.
That's some, like, Twilight Zone Inception, yeah, like, storytelling right there.
Yeah, but you the novels are really fun, and you never know what's really going to happen until, like, I got to the end of the first book, and I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, it was a little surprising, quite frankly. So it's interesting. It'll be really interesting to see how they play with it. And then the other things that are coming on to Freeform, just as a total aside, because if you guys read and love YA novels, it's kind of like Freeform has taken the concept of all these different YA novels and is making them into these really cool, gritty TV shows for, you know, older teens and stuff like that. And adults, too, because I watch them and I'm an adult, so it doesn't matter. But, like, they're making this show called Guilt. And I know Kristen and Karen saw the trailer of it, and they were like, when I just said, oh, it's on Freeform, Karen was like, no. So what did you guys think? You guys, maybe one of you can explain Guilt if you remember what it's about.
Cricket. I don't remember. Like, I've seen, you know how when you go to the movie theater and they've got all of that stuff that is playing while you're waiting for the, like, trailers to come on? Like, it's the, hey, you're there for 20 minutes and we're going to show you all of this nonsense. Well, that's one of the trailers that was going on. And so you kind of tune in and out of it, but it sounded kind of like, if I'm remembering it correctly, one of the main characters was, like, living abroad and gets accused of killing her roommate or something. Yep. Sort of like
it's
that,
kind of
the
a
actual
rip.
Case.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a rip from the headline directly from the case that happened in Italy.
Yeah, and so it's like this girl trying to prove that she's not the one who killed her roommate, and it's a whole bunch of craziness, and the trailer looks really cool. Like, the visuals that they've cooked up for it so far, like, it just, it does kind of grab you. And I didn't really recognize many of the actors. My brother, I'm pretty sure Billy Zane's in it. My brother, like, yes, pointed that out, because it was the only, he was like, wait, what? Who is, I haven't seen him in a while. But other than that, I didn't really recognize any faces, but the story does sound really, really interesting, so.
Yeah, and it looks super edgy, and there's all, like, these, I don't, there were just some really cool scenes. So if you guys have time, pull up the Guilt trailer. If you Google it, it'll come up. It looks really cool, so, and it feels very, you know, kind of that Gone Girl, Girl on a Train vibe with that, like, psychological thriller element, an unreliable narrator, like, that whole kind of thing, which is really, like, cool right now and really, really fun to watch. It's got that vibe to it, so I'm kind of super excited to see that too. We shall see. But yeah, so those are the things happening on Freeform, just to keep you updated. And of course, there will be a season 2 of Shadowhunters, so can't go wrong with that, right? All right, Karen, I saved the very last book information news piece for you, because it's all about The Trials of the Apollo, book 2, because we just got book 1, but why would you hold on us and not tell us about book 2? I mean,
do you not want to talk about Harry Potter first?
Oh, yes, I forgot that one. I'm so sorry. So, my dear Harry Potter friends, as always, J.K. Rowling is constantly releasing different information, and there was some very fun, I guess. So there was some code found in Pottermore, and it revealed the names of the 4 Ilvermorny houses, which are the American houses, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Sometimes I don't ever want to miss up the Harry Potter stuff because I don't need any hate mail. Thank you. I'm trying to be very careful here. So the 4 names of the houses are Horned Serpent, Wampus, Thunderbird, and Puckwudgie, I think. Is that how you say it?
That would be my best guess, yeah.
Okay. I feel like the American house is kind of struck out when it comes to names. But okay. So
except for the Thunderbirds.
All I want to do is be like, Thunderbirds or go! Maybe that's just me.
I kind of like Wampus, not going to lie.
I know. I was thinking Wampus and, like, Wild Rumpus kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, that story with the Wild Rumpus in it? No? Okay. Just me. So, I don't know. I don't know. So, oh, but wait, we have more. So, the Wampus is a creature of American folklore, variously described as some kind of fearsome variation of a cougar. The Thunderbird is a legendary creature in North American indigenous peoples' history and culture. It is considered a supernatural bird of power and strength. Is that like a Gryffindor then? Like, let's equate them.
Probably. Yeah.
It is especially important and frequently depicted in the art, songs, and oral histories of many Pacific Northwest Coast cultures, and found in various forms among the peoples of American Southwest, Great Lakes, and Great Plains. So the Thunderbird, it's widespread, basically. Oh, here we go. We're going to say this word again. The Puckwudgie is a 2 to 3 foot tall being from the Wampanoag folklore. Puckwudgie's features resemble those of human, but with enlarged noses, fingers, and ears. Their skin is described as being smooth gray and at times has been known to glow. Okay, I kind of like Puckwudgie if I get to glow. I'm just saying. And then we have the Horned Serpent. It appears in the mythologies of many Native Americans. Details vary among tribes, with many of the stories associating the magical, mystical figure with water, rain, lightning, and/or thunder. Horned serpents were major components of the southeastern ceremonial complex of North American prehistory. So, you get a history lesson and some really cool names for houses, I guess. So, does anyone else feel like the horned serpents are the Slytherin and the Thunderbirds are the Gryffindors, like, kind of thing? Like, I feel a theme going on here. No?
Yeah, like, if you're trying to declassify them as counterparts to the British houses, the Hogwarts houses, it's very easy to kind of put them in categories. Like, yeah, Thunderbird sounds like a Gryffindor. Horned Serpent sounds like a Slytherin. I would say the Puckwudgie kind of makes me think of Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Wampus would be Ravenclaw because it's the last one.
Yeah, because we got nothing. I'm like, well, it's got claws because it's a cougar.
True.
Sorry.
How cool would it be, though, if all of these were mixed up? Like, if the Horned Serpent was the Gryffindor and the Thunderbird
It would be very cool. I'm just saying, at the cursory glance, you're like, oh, okay, well, we can categorize these and they're equivalents.
Yeah.
And just because of the way, like, the Thunderbird, the you know what I mean? Like, those two definitely stick out as very obvious. But then again, who knows what she's going to do with them. So, I like it. I like it a lot.
Well, and the... Like, the history associated with the Horned Serpent makes it sound really interesting and cool. Like, them being, like, associated with storms and rain and water and all of that. It, like, that is really interesting for me. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe it wouldn't... Maybe I wouldn't be so sad to be a Horned Serpent in this version.
Yeah.
Can we, just for a second, though, like, appreciate that somebody went through all that code to find this? Like, I love Harry Potter fans so much. They're
That's a little intense.
Resourceful.
Like, I love that this is someone's hobby, and thank you so much for going through the Pottermore source code and stumbling across this. That's so cool.
Very fun. All right, so Karen, now you get to tell us about the Trials of Apollo Book 2 news.
Yeah, because actually, strangely enough, he didn't have it in the back of the book this time, which is usually the case, but that's fine, because a few days after the first one was released, he told us all about the second one, which is called The Dark Prophecy, and that sounds super ominous. It comes out next year in May 2nd, 2017, which is normal for his, you know, cycle, and we still get...
Magnus
Chase and the Gods of Asgard Norse mythology series in October, so we're going to be getting two books a year for a couple of years here, which is exciting. Means I don't have to wait as long for all of this mythology. I'm not going to read the synopsis because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but it does sound like it's going to be pretty cool, and it does sound like some of our favorite characters are maybe going to play important roles. And if it's anything like the first book, then I'll be really excited. And this series has 5 books in it, so it's going to be sticking around for a while.
5 books?
Yep.
That's normal for him, though.
For the Percy series, yeah.
Yeah. He just does not like to go quietly. He can't let it go. I love it. I love it.
Well, and, you know, telling it from Apollo's point of view is a very new way to go about this. So I'm a Percy fan anyway, but I'm very, very intrigued to see how this whole Apollo is human thing is going to go down, because he's trouble. So
yeah. And I will tell you, I was really surprised by how immediately I was emotional over his story, because of course we connect with like the kids and we're like, oh my gosh, you know, they're just 16 and they're going through all of this crap. But Apollo and the other gods have been through
everything.
Like, millennia. Yeah, like, time and time again. Love and loss and hatred and all this stuff. And it's compacted into their lives, and we don't necessarily sympathize with them. This book makes you sympathize with them, and it was a really new experience. May have gotten a little choked up a couple of times.
Aww. Oh, Karen. I love it. All right, so do we have anything else to talk about for this episode of Book Hype?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. We covered a lot. Mm-hmm. All right, so just so you guys have a quick recap on what we're going to be doing, we will have a lovely, for Karen's sake, Trials of Apollo, The Hidden Oracle book review coming up in a couple of weeks. We will come back and tell you all about the cool things that we saw at BEA and the books that you should be looking out for in the near future. And we will also be having a Raven Cycle discussion with myself, Brooke, and Natalie. So we got a lot coming up. Just stay tuned and hang with us. And, of course, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns that, you know, we're being mean to Karen as usual, or anything of this sort, please contact us on Twitter at BookHype. We always check that and try to, you know, get back to you as soon as possible. So, until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.